So wonderful to be able to see Shri Shri Radha Shama Sundara, Shri Krishna Balaramaji, Shri Gaunitai, and Shri Prabhupada in the temple.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Tupi chanda palaka girvarir hari Tupi chanda palaka girvarir hari Kishoranandana vraja janarandana Kishoranandana vraja janarandana Yamuna tira vanata hari Yamuna tira vanata
Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Paragraja, Kachara, Sotera, Sajjati, Shinya, Divine Grace, Asi Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada Ki, Iskan, Founder, Charya, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakti, Vrindu Ki Jai, Gaura Pedananda, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Shri Granda. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Dasaya Vipadaya Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kanamane Namaste Sarasvati Dara Vana Vicharnana Vishesha Shingari Prasadari Zitarana Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Text 29 and 30. This is the conversations between Narada and Vyasadeva. So, I guess we can do 629 responsibly. Kalpanta idam adaya Chayane bashyadanvata Shishaya Shor Anu Pranam Vishvashenta Raham Vibho Kalpanta Idam Adaya Shayanem Vashyadanvata Shishaya Shor Anu Pranam Vishvashenkar aham vibho. Okay. Kalpa ante, at the end of Brahma's day, idam, this, adhaya, taking together, shayane, having gone to lie down, ambasi, in the causal water, udanvanta, devastation, shishayisho, line of the personality of Godhead Narayan, anupranam, breathing, vishvashe, entered into, Anta within aham I vibho of Lord Brahma. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. At the end of the millennium, when the personality of Godhead Lord Narayan lay down within the water of devastation, Brahma began to enter into him along with all the creative elements, and I also entered through his breathing. This is Narada Muni speaking. Purport. Narada is also known as the son of Brahma, As Lord Krishna is known as the son of Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead and his liberated devotees like Narada appear in this material world by the same process. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, the birth and activities of the Lord are all transcendental. Therefore, according to authorized opinion, the birth of Narada as the son of Brahma is also a transcendental pastime. His appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. The Lord and his devotees are therefore simultaneously one and different as spiritual entities. They belong to the same category of transcendence. In text 30, Sahasra Yuga Paryante Utayedan Shishrikshita Marichi Mishra Shyaya Prane Bhyoham Chajagnire. Translation, after 4,300,000,000 solar years, when Brahma awoke to create again by the will of the Lord, all the rishis like Marichi, Angira, Atri, and so forth were created from the transcendental body of the Lord, and I also appeared along with them. Report. The duration of a day in the life of Brahma is 4,320,000,000 solar years. This is stated also in the Bhagavad Gita. So for this period, Brahmaji rests in the yoga nidra within the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the generator of Brahma. Thus, after the sleeping period of Brahma, when there is again creation by the will of the Lord through the agency of Brahma, all the great rishis again appear from different parts of the transcendental body, and Narada also appears. This means that Narada appears in that same transcendental body, just as a man awakes from sleep in the same body. Sri Narada is eternally free to move in all parts of the transcendental material creation of the Almighty. He appears and disappears in his own transcendental body, which is without distinction of body and soul, unlike conditioned beings. Om Jnana Kamrandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksuramitanina Kasma Sri Gurve Namaha Vanchakalpa Trivisha Kripa Sindhu Vyevicha Patitano Pavanagyo Vaishnavedya Namo Namaha. So this is getting towards the conclusion of the story of Narada Muni. Narada Muni has now left his material body. Very nice verse 27 described like lightning flash and another lightning flash. He immediately went from his material to a spiritual body. Now it's describing how he enters into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu at the time of the end of the material world. There will be partial devastation of the day of Brahma, which is every 4,320,000,000 years, Srila Prabhupada explains. And then he again comes out along with Lord Brahma and the other rishis at the dawning of the day of Brahma. So Srila Prabhupada explained, this is a transcendental pastime. This is not a material pastime. He's not born into the material world like other living entities are. But he remains in that self-same body. It's Narada Muni. In other words, the pictures we see of Narada Muni with his veena, that's his eternal position. That's not how he appears in the material world. He comes back again and again in that form. That's his spiritual body, his spiritual form. And Prabhupada says he's almost on the level of the Lord, which means of the same spiritual quality, obviously not quantity. It's also explained by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his purport to this verse that the other sages like Marichi, etc., they actually appear in their material bodies. They have material bodies and they have particular duties within this material world as progenitors and sages, etc. But Narada is different. Narada does not appear in a material body like the other sages, but in his spiritual body. So I think this is very interesting, this whole idea of the spiritual body and how one can obtain a spiritual body. Because attaining our spiritual body is possible for every conditioned soul. We all have the spiritual body, the spiritual form that is there for us originally, our original sarup, covered at this time, but it is possible to redevelop for that spiritual form and body to manifest within us. Now, Narada, of course, is a very special great soul. He didn't have to go through a long process. Well, he did. He had some process of self-realization. But his appearing in his spiritual body now just comes about spontaneously. But he is an example that is there for all of us. That all of us through spiritual practice, through sadhana, can attain that spiritual body, which we will have eternally. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the nature of the spiritual body, the spirit soul, and how we can revive that spiritual body within us. Now, many transcendentalists or spiritualists may understand the nature of spirit, the nature of matter, and see that there's some distinction. That there really is a spiritual world, or there's a spiritual dimension, or we have some spiritual essence within us. But often that's an impersonal understanding. Many people think God is some impersonal force, and they believe the soul is also an impersonal force. Like we're a light, or we're a being, or something they're not really very clear on. So the actual idea of having a spiritual body, like Narada Muni did, and like every living entity ultimately has, is very less understood. And I think this is one of the major contributions of Krishna consciousness, of our Vaishnava philosophy. Very few religions, I can hardly think of another philosophy that understands the spiritual body, the spiritual nature of both the Lord and the living entity, and how that interacts, interrelates. So this is very important philosophically, and it's actually very, very wonderful. I find it's one of the things when I came to Krishna consciousness that I think that I found very rewarding and exciting, and you know, the fact that no, we're not just some impersonal form, even of that spiritual, but that we actually do have this eternal form and eternal relationship, and God has an eternal form, and we have an eternal relationship with Him. So we have this Satchitananda Vigraha described. We have a spiritual form. The Lord has a spiritual form. Satchitananda, of course, it is eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Krishna is described this way, but also the living entity. So first, understand the nature of the soul. Of course, there's so many things described about the soul, particularly in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, you could say, is practically the science of the soul. It describes everything about the nature of the soul. What is our activity? You know, how do we understand that? So one nice verse, a little farther along, after the identity of the soul and the difference between spirit and matter is well established, is chapter 13, text 34. It says, O son of Bharata, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness. So this is one of the ways that we can understand the nature of the soul, is by consciousness, and how the entire body is illuminated and animated and alive because of the nature of the soul within. And Prabhupada explains this. He says in the purport, there are various theories regarding consciousness. Here in the Bhagavad Gita, the example of the sun and the sunshine is given. As the sun is situated in one place, but is illuminating the whole universe, so a small particle of spirit soul, although situated in the heart of this body, is illuminating the whole body by consciousness. Thus consciousness is the proof of the presence of the soul. The sunshine or light is proof of the presence of the sun. And this is something that is such a nice explanation. And this is something we can tell people. And most people can understand this. You know, well, how do you know there's a soul? Well, how are you conscious? What is that consciousness? You know, is that something that's just part of your body? No. And in other words, once that consciousness is no longer there, once the spark is there, there's no life in the body. And Prabhupada explains this very nicely. Now, learning more about, or understanding more about the nature of the soul. There's so many things that we can understand in so many scriptures. One that I like is, just because it's sort of succinct, is the Paramatma Sundara of Jiva Goswami. And there's a discussion there of the eternal qualities of the Atma. And just to summarize, which is a couple hundred pages of that great work, it mentions that the Atma is individual, each one is separate, each of us is an individual living entity, each one of us is conscious, and we're also self-aware. We are aware of everything around us, aware of the objects in the material world, and we're also aware of ourself. That self-awareness is part of our nature. It's also described, just as Bhagavad Gita says, how it pervades the body, how the soul gives consciousness to the body. Also, the Atma is the enjoyer. That's that quality of Ananda that we have, of bliss. In other words, the capacity to enjoy, to experience happiness is not something just in the material world. It is part of our nature. It is part of our eternal nature as Atma. And we also have desire. Desire is part of the nature of the soul, which we'll talk about. Now, the Atma is also considered to be the doer, or the cause of one's own action. So being the actor or the doer means that there's volition, free will. So if we're the doer and the cause of our own action, and we have some free will, we actually have two types of activities that's described by Jiva Goswami. There's the action of the pure jiva in the spiritual world, which is bhakti, devotional service, and there's activity in the material world, which is conditioned activity. So both of those are there, and this is part of the problem. The problem is, if you say this, in other words, the spirit soul is very wonderful and glorious, it's illuminating, it has all these wonderful qualities, but it is also tathagata shakti, it is also small, it is not of the nature, the atma is not the paramatma. The paramatma is all-knowing, all-pervasive, all-powerful, as Krishna, but the atma is very small. And being tathagata shakti means we can become covered by the modes of nature, covered by material energy. As the soul encounters Prakriti, we can become affected. And that our motivation, our desire, which is originally pure, can become materially affected. Now, of course, that is, the free will is there. And we have some control of that, and we do make choices. Unfortunately, we could pretty honestly say that 99.99% of us in the material world made some bad choices. There may be a few liberated souls who came to this material world for a special purpose, but most of us came because we made some bad choices. Leaving Krishna, wanting to be Krishna ourselves, wanting to be the enjoyer, wanting to see how we could be the Lord and the Master of this material energy. So Krishna gives us this place. Prabhupada explains in a purport of Bhagavad Gita 15.7, every living entity as an individual soul has its personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In his liberated state, he is free from this material condition and he's under the engagement of the transcendental service unto the Lord, as Narada Muni. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by material modes of nature and forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain his existence in this material world. So that's the situation we find ourselves in. Now, we've been talking about the nature of the soul, but I would say even a higher understanding is to understand the spiritual body. Understand the soul in its fully developed natural state. So every jiva, every one of us, every atma, every jiva has an original spiritual form in relationship to Krishna. And currently, as we have said, that spiritual form of the jiva is covered by the gross and subtle body. There's a very nice book that I was just looking at. It's a collection, I think, of conversations with Srila Prabhupada. It's called Beyond Illusion and Doubt. And Prabhupada explains some of these very subtle points of the nature of the spirit soul and the spiritual body in there. So I'll read some of that. Prabhupada says, the spirit soul is now within this material body, but originally the spirit soul has no material body. The spiritual body of the spirit soul is eternally existing. So that spiritual body is always there. The material body is simply a coating of the spiritual body. Brahma-bhuta is attained when we no longer identify with the material body but with the spirit soul within. When we come to this platform, we become joyful. So the material body is formed after the spiritual body. Another example Prabhupada gave in some room conversations was it's like a glove on a hand. You know, in other words, why is the glove shaped as it is? Because it's formed around the hand. So in the same way, our material body is formed around the spiritual body. But Prabhupada says the material body is an imitation. It is false. And how is it false? Because the spiritual body has form, the material body, which is a coating, takes on form. As I've already explained, a cloth originally has no form, but a tailor can cut the cloth to fit a form. When the spirit soul is liberated, this material covering perishes, but its spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. It is stated that when a living entity gives up his material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body, he can hear and see. In his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face, and he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. Now, one thing, when I was reading this, I was thinking of a question, and actually in this room conversation, some of the devotees asked the same question. They said, well, does that mean that if it's formed around us, that our spirit soul will look like our material body? I said, no. I said, no. No, because he said the spiritual body is not limited. It can have, you know, many different forms. And they said, well, can it even change forms? Said, yeah. Prabhu said, yes, it can. Usually, he says, usually it doesn't. Usually one is happy in one's particular rasa with Krishna. And so, you know, one remains in that form, but one can. And there are different examples of devotees that have different forms or change forms that are there in our scriptures. In the Priya Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami explained that the very intimate associates of Vishnu, of Narayana, Nanda and Sunanda, that Sanatana Goswami said that Nanda is the same as Nanda Maharaj. I don't understand it. He has two different forms. He can be Nanda, the intimate associate of Narayana and Vaikuntha, and he can also be Nanda Maharaj. In other words, it's an example of how there's no limitations on the spirit. Spirit, it does not conform to our mundane conceptions of time and space and limitation. So anyway, it's a very, very incredible thing. And when the spirit soul becomes liberated from this gross and subtle body. So let's talk about the development of the spiritual body. How do we obtain it? How do we get there? There's a nice, one of the really nice chapters in the third canto is chapter 25, which discusses the superiority of bhakti and the power of bhakti. There's some really nice verses that particularly I like towards the end of that chapter. One of them is 33. It says, bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all we eat. Now, why are we concerned about the subtle body? Because that's what really attaches us, right? In other words, many people, devotees can easily understand we're not our body. Of course we're not our body. It's different, it's matter, dull matter. That's simple to fairly simple to understand. In fact, many non-devotees can even understand that. But to understand that you're not the mind and intelligence, that's more difficult. Because that's the seeding place of our real attachments. You know, it's the mental attachments and our mental conceptions, which are so conditioned. It's so hard for us not to realize that a desire that comes in my mind is not me. So we have to dissolve, get rid of the material of the subtle body. The subtle material body is the binding force. And that's what explains here is how bhakti, not only will it obviously break the identification with the gross body, but also the subtle body. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the example is given here that the fire in the stomach can digest whatever we eat. If the digestive power is sufficient, then whatever we eat will be digested by the fire in the stomach. Similarly, a devotee does not have to try separately to attain liberation. That very service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the process of his liberation, because to engage in the service of the Lord is to liberate one from material entanglement. And then Vishnu Chaturvedi Thakur, in his commentary in this verse, he explains a little bit also about the transformation of the subtle body. Vishnu Chaturvedi Thakur says that bhakti destroys the subtle body, kocham. Kocham? Kocham. Kocham. However, the distinction of this liberation from the liberation caused by jnana is shown with an example. It is like a fire of digestion devouring edible items like food, nigranana. Having no alternative for nourishing the body, the fire of digestion destroys only the useless portions of the eating food but nourishes the life airs, senses, and the dhatus by the good portion of the food. By this, the body gains strength of muscle, senses, and mind. Similarly, Bhakti destroys only the bad portions, the material aspects of sound and all the other senses, material senses, sense devatas. It does not destroy the good portions of sound or other sense objects and natural senses which are related to the Lord. Chakshushas chakshur uta shoshkashya shotram. The Lord is the eye of the eye and the ear of the ear, from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. By these sense objects and senses, the spiritual body of the devotee appears. Therefore, when the scriptures talk about destruction of the body and the senses, they refer to the material aspects of the subtle body. So in other words, for a devotee, we aren't also developing our spiritual senses and spiritual awareness with the consciousness. It's not fully developed, but it's beginning to develop, and bhakti is nourishing that and destroying the material subtle senses and subtle body. So, how do we achieve the spiritual body? Obviously, by the practice of sadhana bhakti. That's what's being described. Through the process of bhakti, this develops. Now, going back to Srila Prabhupada's discussion in the Beyond Illusion and Doubt, he says, because of our ignorance of the spiritual body, of which we have no experience, we do not know of the activities of the spiritual body. If by Krishna's grace we act in our spiritual body, we can transcend both the gross and subtle bodies. In other words, we can gradually train ourselves to act in terms of the spiritual body. It's stated in the Narada Pancharatna, Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktaruchate. Devotional service means engaging the spiritual body and spiritual senses in the service of the Lord. When we engage in such activities, the action and reaction of the gross and subtle bodies cease. So, it becomes clear so much that we simply engage the gross senses, the gross body, in spiritual activity, then they become spiritualized. The gross and subtle material falls away, and the spiritual develops. So, obviously, we have a spiritual body, the spiritual senses, we have spiritual mind, all of these things. And they develop the process of the body. Further explanation. Prabhupada says, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.25. Okay, this is the verse in the purport. Devotees should gradually increase the culture of devotional service by constant hearing of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These pastimes are like ornamental decorations on the ears of devotees. By rendering devotional service and transcending material qualities, one can easily be fixed in transcendence and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada says, this verse is especially mentioned to substantiate the devotional process of hearing the subject matter. We can increase our propensity for devotional service by hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from realized souls. The more we hear from realized souls, the more we make advancement in our devotional life. The more we advance in devotional life, the more we become detached from the material world. The more we become detached from the material world, as advised by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the more we increase in attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, I was analyzing that purport. And in that purport, it's very, very deep. Prabhupada actually gives four steps. And these four steps that he explains correspond to stages of devotional service. Because everything Prabhupada says is totally in line with the acharyas and in line with our scriptures. So first Prabhupada says we need to hear the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from realized soul. That's, you know, we talk about Shraddha and we talk about Sadhu Sangha. Then we need to advance, he says, then we advance in the process of devotional service, just Bhajana Kriya, performing our sadhana or bhajan. Then we become detached from the material world, which is the Nartana Vritti and Nishya stages. And then we become attached to Krishna, Asakti, Ruchi, and then on from there. So, simple process, Prabhupada gives, explains it very nicely, very easily for us to understand, but it is very deep, totally in relationship and in agreement with Rupa Goswami's process of devotional service and all the other acharyas. So we need to hear the Bhagavatam from realized souls, we begin the process of devotional service, eventually detachment comes about, And through detachment from material, automatically, as we were describing early, becomes attachment to the spiritual. And that means the development of the spiritual senses, the spiritual body, and that will develop through this process. So then what happens? Eventually, the results of perfecting the sadhana bhakti is elevation to the spiritual world. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 1, verse, it says, one is elevated to the spiritual world by the spiritual body and is situated either in Goloka Vrindavan or in another Vaikuntha planet. When one is thus spiritually situated, he no longer thinks of his own personal sense gratification. The spiritual body is called Siddhadeha, the body which one can render transcendental service unto Radha and Krishna. That process is that of engaging the transcendental senses of loving devotion and service. So that is the result. For the devotee to be able to reestablish one's Siddhadeha, one's spiritual body, and render devotional service directly to Radha Krishna, or in Vaikuntha planet, or whatever his particular rasa is. So very, very incredible process that is given to us to be able to enter back into that original relationship with Krishna. So the devotee, one other point is that it's not just that we wait to go back to the spiritual world. If one can become spiritually advanced even in this lifetime, one is able to reach that platform of self-realization. And fortunately, we have examples, all of the acharyas in our line, Srila Prabhupada, we have examples of jivas within this material world who have reached perfection. And one who has reached perfection is called jivanmukta. Jivanmukta means that one is liberated in this lifetime even though he's still within the material world, the material body. And Narada Muni, of course, had his spiritual body in the material world and wherever he goes. But one could also, even have maintaining his material body in his material world, could also be on that liberated platform as a pure devotee. So the devotee, when he's liberated, can act on a platform. He experiences the emergence of the spiritual body and his relationship with Krishna within the material world. And Narada, of course, is very sudden, but most devotees may take longer through the process of sadhana unless they're a, you know, eternally liberated soul who has come to this material world. But it may take some time for devotees, but it's very possible to reach that position. Now, what is a jivanmukta? What does it actually mean? It's not some... What to say? It's not that they, you know, are going to be like necessarily glowing or have spiritual powers or mystic powers like that. It's really more about their behavior, how they act, and how they think in relationship to Krishna. So the symptoms of jivanmukta are given in this purport by 545 by Srila Prabhupada, and he quotes by Raghacharya, who quotes the Chandogya Upanishad, where there are eight symptoms of a jivanmukta listed. So one of these people, and we could almost like think of Srila Prabhupada as a jivanmukta, as we hear these. What are the symptoms? I won't read all the Sanskrit. So he is freed from all sinful activity. He is not subjected to the miseries of old age. He does not fall down again to repeat birth and death. He is callous to material distress and happiness. He is no longer desires material enjoyment. He has no desire other than to engage in devotional service of Krishna. All of his desires are directed to the Supreme Truth, Krishna. So, I mean, we can just see how these would apply to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, our great liberated pure devotee acharyas. And it's summarized by the eight, Satya Sankalpa. He does not desire anything for his material benefit, and he simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord. So we don't look for something that is mystical or miraculous. In other words, it's simple but extremely profound and very rarely achieved. The one has no desire for material benefit, simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord, and that's the pure devotee. That's the perfectional stage in this material world. So when one is at that stage, the activity of the devotee is the same within the spiritual or material world. It doesn't really matter so much to the devotee where he is, she is. They're simply serving Krishna in any stage of life. So we see this for the great devotees, the associates of Krishna, within the Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada Muni, of course, is our great example. He can serve Krishna in the material world, the spiritual world. He can travel to Vaikuntha. Whatever he does, what does he do? And it's just, this is explained in the next couple of verses, I think. What does he do? He chants Hare Krishna. He chants the names of the Lord. He plays his veena. Think of all the people Narada Muni preached to in the Bhagavatam. You know, we have just a few of them mentioned. Everything from Agrari to the hunter to, here's some of the others. Obviously, he was there with Vasudev and Devaki, and he was there with, who was the one who, no, that wasn't Narada Muni, the one who lost his son, and came back and spoke to him. Or was that Angira? That was Angira. Anyway, Narada Muni is there everywhere, you know. And so he's an example of one acting on the spiritual platform. And the movement between the material and the spiritual body is really immaterial to one on that level, because the advanced devotee serves in any situation. Now, of course, many of these descriptions are certainly beyond our level. They're not where we're at right now, but they do serve as inspiration. They serve as where it's possible for us to go. They serve as the roadmap. In other words, we perform the process given to us by the acharyas, and eventually we can become like the acharyas. Not that we'll be necessarily as great as they are, but we can attain it. But we can attain a state of pure devotional service. It's possible even within this life. And if we're not perfected within this life, Krishna and Prabhupada will help us perfect us, bring us to a perfectional stage in our next life. And but the situation is only positive for a devotee. Material world is miserable. We don't need a whole class on that. We all know it. We're all experiencing it right now. The world is in a terrible, miserable state. We are really getting the threefold miseries, you know, on everyone. But the devotees, our outlook is positive. Prabhupada said, materially pessimistic, spiritually optimistic. Because we see the development of our spiritual nature, our spiritual body starting to unfold, and just coming closer and closer to Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions?
If you have a question, you can type it out on the chat room, or you can text me at 352-221-0041.
Could you be able to say that text a little slower?
If you have a question or some comments, you can type it on live chat at ISKCON Alacha Hare Krishna YouTube. Or you can text me at 352-221-0041. So I have one question. I'm not being judgmental, but I'm saying, beside us, most of the religion society, they do not allow, or they even, I personally experience, the taboo about personal concept of God. They actually criticize even the deity worship. You have any comment on that?
Well, yeah, we not to criticize other religions, but it's well established, and Srila Prabhupada talked about many times how there's different understandings of God. There's different levels of spiritual understanding. And then, like, you know, there's the beginning student, and there's the more advanced student, the PhD student. And this understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, is the postgraduate study of spiritual realization. So we have perhaps a little, not perhaps, we do. We have more knowledge, more deep knowledge of Krishna in his personal form. Now, religions are very different about that. Some of the world religions are quite impersonal. and some are more personal. For instance, Christianity is actually somewhat personal. Not a full understanding. You know, for instance, there's something when a Christian wants to know this. Anyway, the concept why not all Christians have this, but sometimes they have the idea that they go to heaven in this body. Or, you know, like the body somehow continues, not quite understanding spirit and matter and the difference and like that. And I think that their understanding of God is very vague. You know, kind of like, is he an old man on the throne or what is he, you know? But there's still some understanding that there's a personal God, and mainly the personification of God comes through the relationship of Jesus. The Christians do feel like they have a personal relationship with the person of Jesus. So there is some personalism there. And that's probably, when you think about it, how many people who were raised in Christianity even probably came to America, took to Christian consciousness. In other words, it wasn't like so difficult. And of course, there are many people who weren't, or no religion. And the philosophy just appealed to us, you know, it grasped us, it grabbed us. So it's, yeah, but I would say, and in fact, I think it's one of the first things I said here, I think one of the unique, let's put it this way, in a positive way. I think one of the most unique contributions of Vaishnavism and Krishna conscious philosophy is this full understanding of the spirit soul, the spiritual form of the soul, and the spiritual form of Krishna, and that eternal relationship. And that we do not find too much outside.
I was, about 6 months back, I had a conversation, a couple hours, with Nicole Roy. Her and her husband both are prison ministry stuff.
Here, what?
Prison ministry. They run the prison.
Oh, prison ministry.
In Stark, the place called Stark. It's a couple hours.
Stark. Yeah. Okay.
And I remember, because I wanted to understand, because we're very close friends in the jewelry business. And so they told my son that, why not, we want to talk to your dad. So I went there. Anyway. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was very interesting, because when I asked them, is the God person, conscious being, spirit, or matter? So they say spirit. Is the spirit has a form, or just a idea of spirit? Like, what is spirit? It says a soul. I say, I understand, but what is the soul? It's a spirit. But is it like a conscious being or consciousness? So then I remember she said, it's a consciousness. So I said, so your conception of God is not a person, because person has a preference, characteristics, qualities. Then she said, I guess, I mean, spirit means spirit, not matter.
Yes.
But there is no further description. That's it. We ended with that. And I felt not happy, but we gave them prasadam. They love prasadam. Yeah.
Well, you began the conversation, at least.
Yeah.
You began the process, and then as that continues, you know, and especially if they are reading books, by hearing, you know, a lot of times, I remember when I was becoming, just kind of in terms of your question, when I was first sort of interested in spiritual life, you know, and I first started really getting into, especially Indian philosophy and Eastern philosophy, I didn't know what to read before I saw Prabhupada's books. So I read the entire life of Ramakrishna, you know, which is totally contaminating. It's amazing. I even became a devotee after that. You know, no. But you know what I mean. It's all impersonal. Everything people read is impersonal. So it's naturally that they're confused. And I didn't find it real satisfying, but I thought, oh, I guess maybe that's how it is. And then it was so wonderful to read Bhagavad Gita and get Prabhupada's books, to be able to really find the real essence of, oh yes, that's what it is, this makes sense. So they just haven't heard this, they're ignorant. People like that, you know, are, you know, within the innocent category, right? You know, they're not antagonistic.
They're nice people.
Yeah, they're nice people. They're innocent. That means they can hear. If they're innocent, they can hear the philosophy, and some may take, some may not, but, you know, it'll be beneficial for them.
Even Aristotle says, Hayagriva Prabhu with Prabhupada conversation. Hayagriva Prabhu read, I don't know where from, he said, Aristotle says, matter and spirit always exist. But spirit is not visible without the matter. Then Prabhupada, I'm paraphrasing, but I understood the subject matter. Prabhupada says, oh, that's not Vaishnavism. But then he says, Plato, he says matter and spirit also exist always, but spirit can exist without matter. Prabhupada said that is Vaishnavism.
Mm-hmm.
But Dhruta Karma Prabhu, he wrote a small book, you know, Dhruta Karma.
Yeah.
He said, unfortunately, Catholic society accepted Aristotle's view. I don't know how many people really speak that philosophy in their church. I went once, I didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate your comment on that, because that actually illuminated my heart, that not to see them like Lord or anything, they're just in steps of the same stairs, but they're coming slowly, slowly.
Yeah, so we want... Our role as Vaishnavas and preachers is obviously to bring people to the next step. You know, even like Bhagavad Gita in 12th chapter, right? It says,
yes.
Just be a pure devotee, do devotional service, but if you can't do that, do this. And if nothing else, do good works, right?
Yes.
It's kind of like, you know, do something that elevates you.
Yes.
So, but that's, if we have the opportunity to not just elevate people, but bring people to Krishna consciousness and give them bhakti little by little. And sometimes that's just prasadam. Taking prasadam or hearing the holy name or associating favorably with devotees. But anyway, you know, their life has begun. You know, their devotional life has begun.
That's true.
And it's progressing.
We have a question
okay.
or comments. Let's see. Can you repeat the name of the book you cited of Srila Prabhupada's conversations?
Oh, that I was reading from? Yeah, let me get that again. It was, I think it was mostly conversations or maybe some classes. You know, a lot of the little books are compilations of Prabhupada's. It was called Beyond Illusion and Doubt. I haven't really seen it around, but you can get on the Veda.
Can you say it again slowly?
Beyond Illusion and Doubt. And it's on the database if you have that. I don't know. I haven't actually seen the book itself. I don't think it's put out much.
No.
You have a copy? There we go. Well, there are copies of it around. But at any rate, Beyond Illusion and Doubt, I know it's on the Veda base. That's where I got it from.
Okay. We have three more. I'll just read the chat one first. As we increase our self-awareness and progress in our spiritual pathway, if we notice unpleasant thoughts, are we moving backward in our process or should be glad we are able to recognize and rectify?
Okay, I think I got it, but I want to hit one word to repeat. It says if we see unpleasant what?
Unpleasant thoughts.
Parts.
Thoughts. Like thinking.
Oh, okay,
thoughts.
Unpleasant thoughts. Yeah, okay.
Are we moving backward in our process?
Not necessarily. Devotional service and bhakti is a purifying process. So sometimes it's a question of purification. One thing I think when I used to do a lot of counseling with devotees is, you know, even on a material or subtle level, that if there are issues that you have, you're going to have to work them out sometime. You know, right? They're always going to be there. They're going to come out. You might as well work on them now and try to, you know, transform oneself or try to elevate oneself or come to a thing. So, and it's very, very similar to spiritual. Spiritually, if we have those anarthas, you know, within us, you know, we need to purify them at some point. So they will come up. And Prabhupada explained that bhakti, one example he called like boiling the milk. Mm-hmm. When you're making, or said like making ghee, I'm not sure. Anyway, skimming off the impurities, right? That'd be more like, that'd be making ghee, wouldn't it? I thought he said boiling the milk, though. That was another example Prabhupada gave. At any rate, you know, it's like you have the things come up. Bhakti, you know, those issues that are there, anarthas, all that. Lifetimes of nonsense, basically. And so if we have those thoughts, it's more what we do with them. Now, if we act on them, then we're probably going backwards. But if the thoughts are there and we're able to somehow understand them or transcend them or go on or ignore them, and the main thing is continue our sadhana.
Are you saying the difference between attack and the defeat? They are not same thing.
Detachments and
attack. Like when the thought comes and attack, that doesn't mean we are defeated.
No. Okay. Not defeated at all. It just means there's one more thing we have to work on. Which should not be a big surprise to us. The fact that we have some material thoughts and it's kind of like Prabhupada said to Shyamasundar. He said this in one of the conversations. It had to do with try to make the story real short because we're out of time. But basically, Shyamasundar had advised a person who was going to take sannyas, if they had any thoughts at all of sex life, they shouldn't do it. And Prabhupada was mad at him. Shyamasundar tells the story, and he chastised him. He says, no. He says, if you're in a material body, you're going to have some thoughts of sex desire. He says, that's not the issue. He said, it's like what you're doing, working, the process that you're doing to become purified and to advance. You know, it's not, it's like, as long as we're here in this material world, we're going to have some material desires, material thoughts, until we become completely pure.
If our soul is part of God, why did God send us to planet Earth to begin with instead of the same spiritual plane as Him? Or did we sin so much that we lowered ourselves past several spiritual levels?
Oh, okay, if we're naturally spiritual and part of God, why do we end up here in this material world? That's basically what he's saying. Because of our desires is the simple answer. In other words, and there's many, many places Prabhupada has explained this, that it's really simply because of our desires that we left Krishna. And if you don't want to serve Krishna, there has to be a place for you to go. And so Prabhupada said this material world is created for two reasons. One is a place for those rebellious souls, us, to go, where we can try to lord over nature apart from Krishna, but it's also a place of reformation. It's a place where we can learn and understand and purify ourselves to come back to Krishna.
This is from Mother Bhagavati. Thank you, Prabhu, for very hopeful presentation. How we are gradually developing our spiritual body. In Prabhupada's presence, we sometimes got a glimpse of the realm beyond.
And when did we get a glimpse of the world beyond?
In Prabhupada's presence.
In Prabhupada's presence, yes. Okay.
We sometimes got a glimpse of the real realm beyond.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that was just a comment. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one more from Mother Swaha.
That was very nice, actually, and it's true. And that is one of the things, one of the great, great benefits and benedictions of being in the presence of a pure devotee, that because he is connected to the spiritual world and he is serving Krishna purely, we do get a little glimpse of that realm. I remember so many things when you're with Prabhupada, I mean, we could go into. But one thing that I remember, and other devotees felt the same way, is when we were with Srila Prabhupada, you were in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means no anxiety, no fear. Right? I mean, in other words, everything felt like everything was fine. We were perfectly situated. Everything is right. I'm with Srila Prabhupada. Right, Mama? Yeah. I mean, to some degree, right? In other words, that was an experience of being in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. You know, he brought the spiritual world with him. And that's, I think, what this devotee is saying, that he got a glimpse of that realm.
Thanks for excellent class. Please repeat the 8 symptoms of the Jivan Muktas once more.
Okay.
Slowly.
8 symptoms of the Jivan Mukta from the Chandogya Upanishad. This is Prabhupada quoting Dharagyacharya. All right, I'll even read the Sanskrit. This is directly what Prabhupada wrote. The first symptom, apahata papa, he's freed from all sinful activity. Vijara, he is not subjected to the miseries of old age. Vimriti, does not fall down again to repeat birth and death. Vishoka, which indicates that he is callous to material distress and happiness. Vijigatsa, which indicates he has no longer desires material enjoyment. And apipapa means there's no desire other than engage in devotional service to the Lord. Satchikama indicates all desires are directed to the Supreme Truth, and such a sankalpa does not desire anything for his material benefit and simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord. And you can find that in Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.4.5. Okay? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you all very much, and thank you for your questions. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Is that?